Blog Talk Radio.
We are the UR Tennis Network. Our mission is to be the voice of tennis. We enlist a team of passionate enthusiasts to promote our sport. We strive to bring interesting perspectives on the many spins of tennis. Our goal is to provide the learners of our sport with current news and information from many angles. We seek active participation from communities interested in tennis, but tennis is not interested in them. We are expanding our outreach. Tennis is a true lifetime sport that needs to be talked about, and the UR Tennis Network pledges to pursue this idea relentlessly.
And gentlemen, let's get ready to be inspired! Introducing in the red corner, American Tennis! And introducing in the blue corner, your host for American Tennis, Mr. Chuck Griese! Ladies and gentlemen, time to get in the game.
And good morning again. And this is Coach Chuck Griese, and I'm broadcasting live here from College Park, Maryland, at the Junior Champion Center here in College Park. I'm so glad to be back after being on the road here a couple weeks. But this is American Tennis Program, and we are here to discuss everything and anything that you would like to talk about. We're asking you to stand up and speak out. I wanted to remind you the quote from Edmund Burke, that all that it takes for evil to prosper is for good men to do nothing or good people to do nothing. We have a duty to stand up and speak out, get past those cliches and those facts of just surface stuff, and let's talk about the real meat. All that you need to do, really, is just remember, address issues, not people, stay professional, and nobody can find fault. My mama used to say that a squeaky wheel gets the oil, but if it squeaks too loud, it'll get removed. Try to find that balance so we can get some change to occur. This is the UR Tennis Network. You can get every show on the UR Tennis Network by going to your iTunes, do the podcast. All you have to do is put in there UR Tennis, and it will show you each and every show, all of the American Tennis programs, the Bruce Lipka shows on Thursdays, the Parenting Aces program, the College Tennis, the Diversity and College programs. Just a fantastic lineup, and you can go all the way back a couple years and get every show. We've had some great people on here, and I wanted to remind you of the We Coach Tennis programs that we're hoping will come back on the air too soon, but there were some great ones there as well. If you want to call in, the phone number is 714-583-6853. That's 714-583-6853. If you want to talk. My website is chuckcreasy.net, and you can go there. I wanted to give a little bit of pump to my 38th year of running tennis camps. I'm so proud that I've had over 15,000 children through my camps since 1976, and I really am proud that we do this in a very fine way for the children, and they learn a lot. But go to my ChuckCreasy.net, our TotalTennisTraining.com is my campsite, but ChuckCreasy.net has all of it. T3 Mentorship Program is there as well if you want to subscribe to the T3 Mentorship Program. And thank you, Alex Slezak, for helping me always with the T3 Mentorship Programs. We want you to stand up and speak out. And I've just got back, about a week and a half ago, I got to go to the USTA yearly convention or yearly workshops that they had down there in Western Florida. And I'm very, very glad that I got to run into our guest today, Virgil Christian. I wanted to make sure Virgil's on the line. Virgil, were you able to get in out of that meeting?
Yes.
You're on the line. So
yes. Can you hear me?
I sure can, and you're coming in loud and clear, and I'm really excited to talk to Virgil today. What an opportune time, because last week we had Coach Dan Vonk on, and we were talking about the importance of high school tennis and community tennis, but mainly our rural communities. And Virgil Christian is the man. He is the liaison, and he is in charge of community and college tennis for the USTA. And Virgil, before I give you all your accolades and everything, if you just hang with us and let us do our commercial, and we'll be right back here with American Tennis. And Coach Virgil Christian, I'll call you, because you have been in the trenches for so long doing the tough work as well, and I'm glad that you are heading up something that's so important right now. We'll be right back with Virgil Christian.
Alternative Lighting and Power is a renewable energy solutions-focused company with an emphasis in helping athletic facilities. We would like to upgrade your tennis complex to the 21st century. We offer a range of services that will upgrade your tennis complex. We can use our technology to make your facility virtually disappear from the energy grid. We can provide lights, scoreboards, scoring systems, cooling systems, heating systems, camera systems, covered seating areas, wastewater management, and even new buildings. Our company is located in Houston, Texas, but we provide services to all 50 states and internationally. We would love to visit with you about our opportunities. Please contact Ed Love at 832-549-4193 or email at elove@alternativel-p.com. You can also visit our website at www.alternativel-p.com. We are the sunny side of business.
Exciting, as we are having a lot more players come up the ranks, especially on the women's side. But Virgil down there, Patrick McEnroe, gave a great history of what's been going on the last 3 years. But we've got a lot more players coming up on both the men and the women's side. It was interesting to see that he talked a lot about players in the top 300 under 21. Could you give sort of your real quick take on that? I mean, I thought it was a real good sign.
Yeah, you know, Coach, I did think it was a good sign. I mean, I think a lot of the work that's being done all over the country, you know, and Patrick was addressing player development, what's going on in Boca and Carson. I mean, it takes time, you know. It takes time. Kids, you know, they grow up, but they don't grow up overnight. And so I thought it was very encouraging. And I think what they're trying to do now is really lay, you know, really go deep with some of what they're doing and allow time to happen and allow these kids to, you know, mature and be in a good environment, a safe environment to, you know, to ultimately hopefully play college tennis or maybe even then play pro tennis. So I was encouraged by it, too. I see them firsthand a lot, and I think there's some really good people there that are really trying to do some good work and partnering, too, which is, I think, the other thing that's exciting to see is really trying to partner with, you know, those of us that, you know, are in the trenches or doing the work, too. So I was very encouraged by what Patrick shared.
Yeah, I really like the way that Dave Haggerty went around and he stopped everything for a while. They had a pause for a couple months, and some people didn't like that, but I liked that he went out and listened to everybody. And most of the time people just want to have a voice to say something, and Patrick was pretty open as well. It was really well attended. But what I like seeing is how he matched up how many under 21 players we have that are in the top 300 compared to the other places in the world. We have the most, really, of the top countries, or we're at least tied with most. So we are getting players coming up the road, and it is ever-changing. But one of the things, and I want to get right into, I want to talk about your credentials here a second and bleed it in, because I think you're absolutely the perfect person for the job. Your background in college tennis, which I want to talk about briefly, but also you've been in the community tennis programs in the trenches there in Raleigh and in Atlanta, and you've been a college coach, and you've sort of seen every facet of it. But Virgil, one of the things that was really stood out, and the thing that I hit Dan Vonk with last week, was that 450,000 of our kids are playing high school tennis. With the numbers so far down, we have 450,000 participants. But the telling tell on that is that, and I sort of made the comment one place that it's, we're making bowlers out of kids, where everybody in the world's gone bowling once or twice, but there are very few bowlers. You know, in tennis, we're getting a lot of kids to play tennis, but not many tennis players are coming out of that. The 450,000 kids, but only less than 10% have played 5 tournaments last year. And then the other statistic was 72% of all of our pro athletes are coming out of rural, not urban, but rural communities, like the French Lick, Indiana's, or the Fox Cliff, Pennsylvania's, where you're from there, out of rural, Fox Chapel, Pennsylvania, rural communities. But those numbers are pretty big. Is USTA and your office sort of on top of this and aware that we've got so many kids that are playing, but they're not going to level 2, 3, 4?
Well, I mean, in one sense, I'll be really honest with you. I mean, when you brought that up, Chuck, I think a lot of us, you know, took a pause and said, you know what, we don't know everything. That's interesting. But on the other hand, we are looking at, and we do spend a lot of time talking to experts and non-experts in the field of, you know, where are the next kids coming from that are going to play tennis. So I thought when you shared that, you know, what I thought was, you know, in the rural environments, whatever your ethnic race is, it can be, you know, it can be anything. I think dreams are bigger there, perhaps, because there's not as much, at least back when I was growing up, there wasn't as much to do, and so tennis could occupy that. What we need to do, and whether it's urban or rural, and I think you're onto something there, is tennis needs to become more compelling as an option. And that is really, when you really break it down the way I see it, tennis needs to become more compelling as some of a sport that kids want to try and then play. And then secondly, we also know that in those areas, they're going to have to play on their own. They're going to have to, you know, let's go hit against the wall. Let's go play against, you know, the neighbor down the street. Let's go to the park. That's got to be compelling. And sometimes we've lost sight about that. You know, we're in the tennis business, and we just because we can hit a forehand maybe, we think an eight-year-old seeing the game the same way we are. And I think it's really refreshing to actually go into rural environments or urban environments and actually watch eight-year-olds and nine-year-olds and see what they can and can't do and what they're attracted to. It's kind of eye-opening. One of my jobs, Coach, is in facility development, and I travel all over the country, urban, rural. We have a very we do have an emphasis on rural sites, 2-3 court sites in communities less than 25,000. We think that's very important. So on one side, we are doing that. But as you look around and talk to kids, when you do these, when you work on facilities, you really find it's eye-opening. You learn something about kids nowadays. And one thing my takeaway being there is, you know, it's got to be attractive. There's got to be a reason why a child picks up a racket and hits a ball. We all know that play, the ball hitting the racket is a beautiful thing. I mean, that's one thing I don't think, you know, that is so compelling, but we got to get the kids there. So in one sense, Chuck, to answer your question, you know, you brought something I hadn't put numbers to, but in the other sense, we are trying to reach out to those communities and specifically through our coaching and program, giving those kids a place to play. And that's why we refurbish courts, and we really put an emphasis on those small towns, 2 and 4 courts. Let's get them refurbished so a kid would have a place to play. If he's compelled to pick up the racket and get out there, let's get him on a place where he's like, wow, you know, I'm going to come back Saturday morning and do this again.
Yeah, I want to come back to that and talk about Dan Vonk's talk last week and some of the issues that he's trying to deal with. But there's a sleeping giant for sure. I mean, I know I grew up at a park, and I want to talk a little bit about how you grew up here. You grew up in outside of Pittsburgh there, and I don't know, did you grow up in a club or a park, or was your dad into it, or how did you grow up playing tennis?
You know, it's funny. You know, my dad was into it, and I used to, on Saturday mornings, go to the local park and tag along, and he would play a challenge match or a Saturday morning men's competitive thing, and I would wait till about 1 o'clock, and he'd come off exhausted, and I'd be there and say, hey, you know, can we play? And my dad was great. He would bring, even though I look back, he must have been pretty tired, but, you know, we'd go out on those public courts and hit, and that was kind of my first start. You know, I didn't really... You know, I played a lot, you know, and I met some kids, and we just would meet and play. I know the environment's changed a little bit now, but that was kind of my first interaction with tennis. But I was compelled because of a relationship with my dad, but also because once I got to play and could keep the ball going, it was just the greatest feeling in the world to be on the tennis court.
Well, the relationship with your dad and just been playing, what you said, you played a lot more than just drilled. I can remember not even having lessons, and we used to just play like up to 10 sets a day at the park and things like that. But I want to go on here, and you know, my first experience of meeting you, Virgil, and I've got to talk about the great one, one of the great ones in my eyes. And people say, who do you respect? Vesa Panka was on here 4 or 5 weeks ago, and he said, you know, respect and trust must be earned. You know, as a coach, it's not about liking somebody. It's not about their pedigree. But the respect and trust must be earned. But your coach, you went on, you played at Penn State. You were the captain of the team there for 2 years under what I call the great Holmes Catherall. And let me tell you why I call the great Holmes Catherall. And can I tell the story a little bit about what your team
please did?
Now, my first impression of Penn State tennis, I was a new coach at Clemson, and back in the 70s, I'd get Coach Catherall would call me and say, could we play a match? And I'd say, well, sure, Coach, you're coming down here. He said, by the way, can we stay at your field house like we always do for a couple weeks? And I would go, well, wait a minute, just one match. He said, well, can we stay there, Charlie? You should call me Charlie. Can we stay there? I'd go, yeah, well, sure, Coach. And then he says, well, can we practice at your courts as well? I said, well, sure, Coach. And he said, we'll probably take most of the meals in your dining hall and then figure it out from there. But Penn State, literally, you guys would come over, you would stay at the Fike Field House there by Clemson University. You would come and play us maybe a couple matches. Then you would go play Furman and Georgia and Anderson. up to play Duke, down to Georgia Tech, over to South Carolina, and then come back and sleep in the bunks every night. And I can remember after the second week of some of those trips, Virgil, that you guys would drag out of bed and coach would bring you over there to train. But here's why I call him the great one, is because not only Virgil Christian has been in the business, the tennis business, and stayed, but you have Adam Steinberg, who's now the coach at Pepperdine, who's won a national championship. You have Dwayne Hultquist, who has been at Florida State and then was at Texas and for years. And the bottom line is Holmes's, Coach Catherall's posterity will always be great, regardless of what his prosperity was. Can you talk a little bit about Holmes? And we'll, you know, because I want people out there to understand that this is what greatness is. They pass on. It's a law of reciprocity. Whatever you give to others, it comes back to you tenfold. And his is mushroomed all over the United States.
Yeah, well, first I want your audience to know that college tennis isn't quite like that anymore. That was a different era. And also I want them to know that, you know, Coach, you know, he really loved and respected you. And I think that passed on to a lot of the players on the team. When we would come to Clemson, we'd watch your practices and watch your guys. And you had some incredible players there that were just really not only fine players but fine men. And actually I work with three or four of them now. Just incredible what you were doing there. And Coach was, we were very honored and excited to come there. But, you know, one thing Coach Catherall did was, you know, he was a great coach and a great teacher. And he actually was able to make that transition. And this is where some of our coaches today, you know, struggle a little bit. He was able to make that transition from a player, and he was Colgate. He went to Colgate, but he was an All-American. Not All-American, but he was in track and tennis and all different sports. He was very accomplished as a athlete, or as a player. He was able to make that transition to really be a coach and a teacher. And, you know, you were able to do that. A few others were able to do it. But a lot of our coaches today, they struggle with that. They struggle to let go of themselves and let go of who they were as a player and really focus on the other. And Coach was able to do that. When Coach was helping you with your forehand or strategy, you knew, and this is something a good coach, you just pick up from a good coach, you knew it was about you. It wasn't about him. It wasn't about what he did in Colgate. It wasn't about what he did yesterday, the day before. It was about you. And I think players, more than anything, can sense that, and then they listen, and they really can just embrace that. And he was able to do that with Adam, myself, and Dwayne, and John Mercer, who's at Marshall, and so many others that went through that system. And it was a real gift.
Yeah, it was a real gift. Contributed forever. Who else was on that team, Virgil?
Well, John Mercer is an outstanding coach at Marshall. He's had girls get to the finals of the NCAA doubles two times, I believe. But he was able to really teach and really coach in a way that was really special. And I felt really blessed to be able to be a part of that. I mean, but like you said, I mean, a lot of, you know, he didn't have the greatest teams, but he took boys and really did coach them to be men, I think. And that's hard to judge on a win-loss scale. But, you know, we had some great results, which if it would happen today, it would almost be like Florida Gulf Coast is doing right now. I mean, you'd be like, what? The 15th seed? I mean, I remember going to Georgia and getting some wins in Georgia. That's crazy. But he was able to do that, and he was just a great coach. And you're right, just a remarkable man. And you know, people, my colleagues and my former teammates, you know, it's not a time we don't get together and we tell coach stories. But again, it was a different era, not the coaching wise, but the traveling. When I don't think many teams stay at a bunkhouse anymore, or you know, play two, three times a day matches.
We all used to. All of us used to do that. We used to sleep. My first two or three years, we would sleep in dormitories, eat in the dining hall somewhere. And we actually played, I remember, Virginia sleeping on Army cots under the stadium. LSU, we stayed under the stadium for a whole week, myself and eight guys in the one room, the shower, the commodes, the bunks, everything was in one room. And but it was housing, and we would roll out of bed and go eat and play and come back, and tennis was the most important thing. And then somewhere along the line, we got a little too cute. It became an arms race where so-and-so got to stay in a nice hotel, then a Wyndham, then all these things. And now it's completely out of control. Players are looking at what they have instead of what they're giving. I got to tell you real quick, what Holmes, I remember, here's a great thing. We used to, in those days, the coaches, we didn't have referees. It was beautiful. I told that at the USTA meeting couple weeks ago, that we never had referees. We, for the first 10 years I coached, the home coach was supposedly, I was the referee, but the coaches, we would sit in the stands or go up, stand in the stands, and we would walk back and forth, and Holmes would say, okay, let me show you this guy, Virgil Christian. Let me show you what he's doing. Or let me show you this guy. And, oh, I'd say, oh, gosh, that's a good two-handed backhand, coach. How'd you teach him that? And then Holmes would sort of say, okay, Charlie, here's what I did. By the way, your guy at number six there, he has no second serve. Now, Charlie, let me show you what he needs to do. That. Can you believe that this type of camaraderie? Now, we wanted to win. In the worst way, we wanted to win, but we understood the purity of the game. Right. And before anybody would walk out of there feeling like we got messed over or somebody hooked us, the coach would hang their head in shame. That would never happen. So, right. You know, these are some of the things that tennis, I know, Virgil, that this is what kept me in tennis. It was just a higher calling than just an athletic right. event. But it was really, right. really different. Let's talk real quick about college here a second. In your opinion, you know, the relevancy of college tennis in America. Virgil, I mean, you've done it. You've been a college player. You've been a college coach. You've worked yeah. in community programs. Now you're in charge of the whole United States. They're trying to bring some, you know, energy through all of these, the communities and the colleges, so that we not only have champions, but we have love of the game again here. What's the relevancy of college tennis in America as far as you're concerned?
I know, I want to be honest with you. I deal with not only communities and but TV folks and media folks and you know, the relevancy and athletic directors, you know, and the relevancy right now is diminished. You know, we've kind of missed an opportunity, I think, to bring this sport to the center stage. You and I and some other folks can talk about it, and we understand how beautiful it is, and it's a beautiful game, and what it teaches, and the sports. It's just wonderful. Oh, and by the way, before I even get to that, you know, your comment about officials, we had a staff meeting yesterday, just so everyone knows, you know, we're trying to listen more because, you know, that's where we came from. And we spent probably a good hour talking about that and how we can experiment with some of the ideas you talked about officials and maybe in the early age divisions, not using them, or, you know, what can we do because of what you brought up? So, you know, not only that, but, you know, you mentioned the junior comp issue. We went on the listening tour for a reason. You know, we actually listened. And, you know, we learned a lot. And so anyway, I wanted to bring that up. But, you know, look, if we're going to be really honest with ourselves, we can't talk to TV because unfortunately, they're not going to listen. And if we're not on TV and in the media, we're going to drop because people aren't going to be viewing college tennis and people aren't going to be going to matches. That's just not what I want to be true. But when I talk to athletic directors and ESPN and Tennis Channel, that's unfortunately what they say. And in today's world, we need to have some relevancy or we're going to lose programs. Now, we lose programs for a couple reasons. I think some are deal with, you know, not having the local player on your squad. I think some have to do with the coach not being engaged in the community to the point where the athletic director would be like, I can never let him go. That program is so intertwined into the community. But we also need people in the seats. We need people coming and saying, I'm not a tennis player, I'm a sports fan, and I'm going to pull for Clemson today, and that's a compelling match against South Carolina. We need that. So unfortunately, I don't think we are at all. But what we want to do, and what we kind of, as the USTA and my group decide to do this year, is we want to start putting more resources in directly right to the programs and say, you know, we want to promote you. And so we came up with College Match Day, which is obviously similar to College Game Day. And we're putting resources and publicity about what a special event this is. Even at the format it's playing now, which sometimes can be quite long, but we want to put everything we can and promote the Brian Bolins at Virginia and what he does, not only to the public at large, but also to his athletic department, that this is an important match against Duke and Ramsey Smith. And I name those names because we're focused on kind of three simple things that we think we can help, is really helping the match become more prominent by promoting it. And that could be simply by saying, we believe in this and we're going to get it out in the media and we want people to become there as fans. We also think we should promote the coach because there's so many things you did and other Dan McGills and Manny's and all that are doing some really neat things coaching-wise that I would like to hear that story. I would like to hear the story of how you took an athlete from Greenwood, Indiana, and sent to the Pro Tour. What did you look for there? I want to hear that story. I want to hear the story of how you took a team down after a single, down 4-1, and turned it around in doubles. What did you tell them? How did you get that lefty to not falter under pressure? How did he step up? What were those coaching strategies? See, in college tennis, we don't have stories outside even the match. And we want that, and so that's kind of where I want to go directly to these universities and say, you know, we want to make you a college match of the week, and we want to put media behind it. We want to get it on your local cable. We want to get on radio, wherever we can get it, and then we want to just drive as many fans there, because I do think that even where we're at now, if fans can get to the match, they're going to be like, wow, this is I had no idea. But I don't think we've done a good job. And quite honestly, Dave Haggerty, our new president, and a lot of us, you know, but he's the president, has said, you know what, college tennis, we need to spend some time and resources on it. And a lot of us raised our hands, Scott Schultz, who you know, and said, absolutely, we think it's it hasn't been tapped yet. It's as you said with high school tennis, which I agree with, it's an untapped market. And I'll say one final thing, and then I'll stop. I'm sorry. But the one thing college tennis has going for it, other than even professional tennis, and some people may be like, whoa, wait, what's he going to say here? We have a great game, but the pro tennis does that too. But we have the school colors, and we have not leveraged that, and I mean that in a good way. When Clemson University plays University of South Carolina, already I have a built-in potential audience of people that are going to go to that match. I have Clemson fans. I have non-Clemson fans. I have people that live in South Carolina, used to live in South Carolina, want to live in South Carolina. Then I have South Carolina fans, non-fans. I have already, because of the school colors, which we've never really looked at, we kind of said, what's that brand worth? Clemson. Nothing. Well, guess what? It's worth a lot. And if we can leverage that and bring the match together in something that's exciting and compelling, I'm telling you what, college tennis could be the next big thing because it's a great game, they wear their school colors, and the coaches have neat stories to tell that have not been told yet. So.
Virgil, I'm just so glad that you're, that's why I believe you're the perfect man for what you're doing because you understand this. You remember what it was like with someone like Holmes. You guys who stayed in it understand that the roots that you got. But here's the thing I wanted to point out. This could happen very, very quickly if we would think about the season. Like I kept saying to people down there at the USTA meeting, the high school season they use in Texas would be perfect. This parallels Randy Blumenthal at Indiana University's idea where we should be playing 10 weeks of team matches in the fall to piggyback the football weekends. Could you imagine a Friday night? You already have 50,000 people on campus. Friday night in the fall when the weather is good, then you play Friday and a Sunday. You go about 10 weeks in the fall, and bang, that's it. The team and individual, the team conference NCAA tournament are done by Thanksgiving. Then you have a clay court indoors All-American tournament and the NCAA tournament, four Grand Slam singles events throughout the rest of the year where players would work on their own games and you would help them. Then they would springboard into the summer and want to play tournaments all summer instead of being dead tired from the five straight month grind. Then they would get ready for the fall season again. You could play any format you wanted to. I think any coach would go for a simplified format that was exciting for the fans for that team season, and then you would work on players' games the rest of the year. And the last thing, if you're a small school, if you're a small school and you can't afford the tournaments in the spring, you have a 10-week season now, which everybody could afford, and then you let people go unattached and they could play the rest of the year. So this is, I'd ask you to contact Randy Blumenthal at Indiana University. He's got great ideas there.
You're on to something, and when you share that to me, I'll tell you where I'm, my, you know, I'm not saying this is the way to go, but it's similar to what you're saying. Well, now I'm thinking more about what you're saying. Fundamentally, I think the individual season, the team season has to be split. I think there's a lot of conflicts with that.
I agree.
I think when you're playing a team match,
when
you're playing a team match in the spring and there's two different games being played, one, I got to get my individual person in the NCAA tournament, so I got to make decisions there, but I also got to, I want to win. But there's
right.
sometimes a conflict with that. And I don't think that's a very good product, so to speak.
Virgil, it won't happen in the spring, though, altogether. I mean, I lived that thing forever and ever. We had the best developmental process before 1991 ever for players as we played 2 out of 3 sets in singles, 2 out of 3 sets in doubles. We were able to play as much as we wanted to, individual tournaments as well. But players always made their jumps as individuals in the tournaments. They did not make it in team dual matches. I think the format for high schools is wrong, too. We need to have a tournament every 2 weeks between maybe 8 high schools. College coaches would go to that. They will never go to a dual match to recruit a kid in high school. And we might take a good lesson from Texas.
I think you bring up some great points. And I guess my point was just I'm thinking about what you've said, and we've shared that. But I'm at the point where I think they need to be split because I think there's a lot of conflict. I also believe outside of developmentally, I think – players will develop quicker and better, quicker probably, if they play in front of more people. I fundamentally believe.
Listen, people aren't going to come out in the spring no matter what.
That's why you make a good point.
I think we've got to do it in the fall, Virgil. I got to go to commercial, Virgil. Hang on, we'll be right back. This American Tennis with Chuck Creasy.
Thanks.
This is Jason Haynes, CEO of the UR Tennis Network. We are proud to announce the 2013 summer camp season has begun. At ussportcamps.com, you can plan out a Nike tennis camp experience. These are offered to both adults and juniors for day and overnight camps. Visit ussportcamps.com to pick up a brochure and join over 50,000 youth who say yes to our summer camp experience. Join a Nike tennis camp at www.ussportcamps.com or call us at 1-800-NIKE-CAMPS. In 2013, let our summer camps be your victory. Choose the Nike tennis camps and take your game to the next level.
Chuck Creasy. I'm back with Virgil Christian here. This is the UR Tennis Network, and this is American Tennis. If you want to call in today, it's area code 714-583-6853, and we're talking some about college tennis right now. Virgil, when I was a college coach, I one time in the late 80s went to see my AD, and I said, It was right when Title IX was kicking in. I said, do you think they'll ever drop tennis as a varsity sport? He says, no way in the world, because you get the maximum exposure with the fewest amount of people, and the facilities are already done. It's very relatively cheap sport compared to some of the others. Not so, Virgil, as we've dropped 400 teams, more than 400, and primarily because of so many foreign athletes. And I don't think any of us are against foreign athletes playing college, but we're against the foreign players taking up all of the scholarships. I've been speaking about this for many, many weeks, and what I like is that the USTA has created some incentive programs to try to reward colleges and things. First of all, can you talk a little bit about the foreign issue, how you see it from the USTA point of view, and also the incentive programs that you guys are doing?
You know, Coach, you have to look. I mean, that's a sensitive subject, but you know, I work for the USTA, which is to promote, you know, and grow tennis in America, and I deal a lot with juniors. I used to run an academy. I saw the looks on parents' faces when they said, "Hey, you know, wow. I mean, what opportunities are there, especially for you know, boys?" And you'd have to say, "Well, not, you know, well, that school, yeah, you know," and it was very difficult. Now with the USTA, it's even more difficult. It was hard running an academy. It's even more difficult now. I think the tack we're taking is we're not against, you know, non-Americans playing, but what's happened is, you know, the NCAA produces data on, you know, the percentage of non-Americans playing tennis, and it's the highest sport outside of ice hockey. I think ice hockey's second, especially on the men's side. But when it comes to scholarships, the number is, unfortunately, the number is even higher than the 30%. It's close to 60%.
Let's get that straight. First of all, it's up to 65% of the money in women's programs, for sure, going to. Here's the thing that always aggravated me. I always used to argue with them. Title IX, first of all, is a great rule. I have two daughters. You have two daughters, by the way.
Yeah.
Sorry, I forgot to mention that. But it's a great program, very poorly implemented. It was never meant to break the backs of men's sports. You know, it was never meant to do that. It's a great rule, very poorly implemented. But here's the thing. I used to argue with the Title IX guy when he would come in, and by the way, we had him on our show about, Lamar Daniel was on our show about 4 weeks ago. He was the Title IX guy that used to come around. I said, Title IX was never set up to protect women from foreign countries. It was set up to protect women from the USA. But what has happened is if you take 100% of the scholarships, about 45%, I would guess, go to foreign women. Probably equal amount go to foreign men and American women. So, and then the scraps that are left over are for the American men. And it's disgusting. And Virgil, I fought this for 25 years, and coaches will say, well, we have to win. Well, you know what? By golly, if we had a rule that allowed only two foreigners per team, then you know what? The scholarships would bleed down, and we would have many, many more kids staying in tennis. Because, as you know, when kids get to be 16 and they're saying, where are the tennis scholarships for boys, people are getting smart. They're figuring out that, listen, there are none. I better stay in baseball or something else, because they're all going to foreigners. So it's not just 30%. That was including D3, that's walk-on program. It's more like $63 million going to foreign women, I think, or it starts foreign women and men. About 60%, if you'll look at the relevant, D2 is where you look at. This is disgusting.
Right.
D2 is almost all foreign, completely foreign. And then I think they said the top 25 D1 men's programs, it's 50% of the positions. So,
well, I think we have to look at, I think you're right, Chuck, in a lot of ways, we have to look at the macro. I mean, when this happened 20-some years ago, the results are now here. We can't shy away from the results. They're shocking.
We basically had someone that ran an academy, and now that was, 10 years ago. Nowadays, parents are getting even smarter. The kids aren't even playing. That's why the numbers of kids playing under 12 is so small. Because I think parents, I'm actually surprised how many boys play tennis sometimes. Because I'm like, do you really know? I mean, I guess you just love the game, and maybe that's it. But the opportunities, if we're really going to be honest with ourselves, are so limited. And that's a shame. But we also have to realize, too, in this world today, unlike when we were coaching, and Maryland dropped their program because of football and basketball. That's just the reality.
Unbelievable.
And I tell you why they dropped it, and it's been documented in Sports Business Journal. They had to pay out a basketball coach and a football coach. And they did that over a period of 3 or 4 years. At the end of the day, perhaps Maryland wasn't as relevant as they wanted to be, and that was a choice the coaches made. Perhaps they didn't have as many Americans. That sure didn't help. There was no one from College Park on the team or from Ellicott City, and that probably didn't help them. And it was the least resistant move to make, and the AD flat out said, see ya. And it was gone. And it was gone because football and basketball and the athletic department was mismanaged. I mean, and actually they went to the Big Ten because of that too, because of the payout. So we have to understand that we are all related on the men's side especially, that what happens in football is going to affect us. It's no longer kind of like, well, we're not going to touch tennis because it's a great sport and kids graduating doesn't cost that much. Look, these sports don't cost that much, you're right, but you know what? If I got to cut something, even to gain $400,000, you know, I can do that, and I'm going to, because no one's going to really make a big issue of it.
It's easy to do, so they do it. Bottom line, they shouldn't cut tennis. It doesn't take many participants, and it's all about because it's easy. The real reason, come on, Virgil, it's because it's easy to cut a team. It's all foreigners. Nobody's going to complain. The kids just go somewhere else. Virgil, let's go on. What are the incentive programs at UST? I was intrigued by the putting together rankings, putting together summer play. What are the programs USTA are doing to try to incentivize American players?
Well, I mean, you know, the summer play and the summer team and the opportunity to work with player development is obviously a big incentive for some folks to, you know, for some of the kids to stay there. We have some incentive programs for coaches to get involved in the community, which quite honestly, we incentivize it, but part of me is like, why? I mean, you guys got to understand that this is all so interrelated. You have to touch the community. You have to become a big person in the community. So when these issues happen, and then the college match day, which we're going to roll out to 20 next year, obviously when I'm talking to TV and radio and getting the media involved, I'm making decisions on, you know, who am I really promoting? Well, let's just be honest that I'm going to look at a team like Virginia.
Okay. Good. American
Virginia kids. Well, because guess what? Now we're talking, and this is where some people are like, well, oh, TV's not important. I hear what you're saying, but you know, here's where TV is important. When I'm sitting down with ESPN3, and we're going to do a fall tournament at ESPN Disney next year, second year we've done it, men and women, kind of like you said, a tournament. So I'm sitting down with ESPN3. We're trying to get college tennis back on TV. We're going to make decisions, coach, in the semifinals of who we're going to show on TV. This is reality now. Guess who we're going
to
pick.
You're going to need to pick Americans in it. That is not discriminatory, by the way. Listen, this is what we have to do. We got to get these things on the table and talk about them. With the IPA convention, at the IPA convention, I would like to go give a presentation. I think you ought to go give a presentation. And let's call coaches out. We don't have to call them names, but we need to get to the place where we address this issue, because it's just like our economy. We've shipped all of our jobs somewhere else. And, you know, it's a world economy and this and that. But the bottom line on the thing, it's killed jobs here in the United States. It's killed opportunities here in the United States for a college tennis program. So I applaud you for doing that. And are you doing an All-American team? Has there been any talk about an All-American
team? Dave Haggerty has mentioned that. A few of us have mentioned it. We've looked at, you know, maybe that's something we want to do. And I think it's a very real possibility. Look, we just want to keep – you said it very well, Coach. We want to focus on our mission, which is promoting, you know, tennis in America. I mean, that's – I'm sorry. That's who I work for.
I think I would want to do that anyway, but that's who I work for. And I want to do everything I can to promote American kids, juniors, to have opportunities of playing college tennis. Let's look at it this way. I always like to take the other side of it. Okay, what has recruiting, let's say, you know, I'm at 60% of the top 25 teams on the men's side in the latest ranking, 15 out of 25 teams, which is have three or more non-Americans playing, okay? So that's 60% of their players. Okay, no. So we're very close on our numbers there. This has been happening over the last 20 years. What have we gained from this? As coaches, have
nothing.
We really gained a whole lot? Are you actually, right now, tennis is, so your audience knows, is in the tier three. There's three tiers in athletics. There's tier one, there's two, tier two, and tier three. If we look at their compensation, if we look at their budgets, they actually are in tier three. We are in tier three for a reason. Have we really helped ourselves the last 20 years, Coach?
We prop it up by saying, look, the players are better. We don't have enough here. We don't have enough there. Look, I coached for 33 years, and I know I had 11 scholarship players from international players who I loved and applaud, and I'm still close with almost all of them. But the bottom line on the thing is, it's like I always tell coaches, for them to come here and play during the school year, it's like one of our kids going playing the Bundesliga or something. They play and then they come back. They're never going to be locked in as much as an American kid from Georgia would be at the University of Georgia or something. Now, there are great people. Vesaponta here, who I work side by side with. You know, my golly, I got my start under Harry Hopman. I mean, you've got Jose down there. You've got great people contribute to our American system. And we're not against that. But what we are against is that there needs to be some kind of a limit. And I think the incentivizing like you're doing, I really applaud that Dave Haggerty, it came out and he's said something about it in front of all everybody. And everybody knows that it's on the table now. And that's the biggest thing. So let's move on real quick here. I've got just a few minutes, 7 or 8 minutes. Dan Volk last week, Virgil, talked about the problems he has in rural communities trying to promote tennis. You know, and primarily the things are that, of course, the teachers, and he talked about maybe having apprentice teachers from colleges. That might be something. I would hook you up with this guy. This guy is the superstar of high school coaches, not because he wins, but do you know that he brought in 25 coaches from communities real close to him? His competition he brought in for a coaching seminar that I did there a year and a half ago, and he's just that kind of a man. He was National High School Coach of the Year, but he's got tennis hopping there, and the thing he brought up was that we could use college players in the summertime to go into some of these communities and do apprentice programs if we had something like that. The biggest problem he has, though, and this is what I wanted to address, Virgil, since they started doing this point system for junior tournaments, he could run the best tournament ever and have 300 kids playing and have people show up and everything, but unless USTA awards their points from the top down, his tournament doesn't have much merit. I'm against that. I really believe they need to have that old system where if you build up a good tournament like the Crackerland in Athens, Georgia, the Pepsi 16 Mike Springlemeyer used to do in Florence, South Carolina, if he built up a great tournament in Camden County, Georgia, then it ought to be merited by what you build up, not by what is endowed from the USTA down. That's his biggest problem. Are there any solutions on the horizon for that?
Well, that's why you're on the Junior Comp Committee, and I think you have a very strong voice on that committee. I've lived that life, Chuck. I started a national event called the Peach State Junior Classic in Peachtree City, Georgia. It was very successful. John Isner played every year and lost in the quarterfinals. But we had Chick-fil-A lunches every day, and gift bags, and we gave college coaches a real special treatment, and I had no problem. It was a product that kids wanted to go to because they knew other good kids would go. because right. it was an attractive event.
You created it. You created it on the grassroots, so that's the point. Your
and
initiative.
See, that's a fundamental change that the USTA made when it went to points per round, because the overwhelming thought at that time was kids aren't playing enough, and so we went to points per round. That was before I was here, but and it affected my tournament. If you can look at the national schedule now, and the Peach State is gone. Because it was exactly what you said there. So I don't know what the answer is, but I know what I am very interested in is talking about that issue and looking at both systems again, hybrid. Is there things we can put in place so folks that at the Cracker Land can say, you know what, if I do a good job here, the best players will come because they'll want to come to this Camden County, Georgia, or Peachtree City, Georgia, or where I was at in Cary, North Carolina. You know, it's important that we support that initiative entrepreneur that says, hey, John Isner, please come to my tournament, and you know that others will, and you'll have a great time, and your family have a great time. And guess what? He did for 4 or 5 years. Melanie Udon played every year. Robbie Ginepri. I called Dennis Rizzo out in California, Coach Rizzo, and, you know, he brought his son in. But it was a different way of looking at an event, and I think that is going to be a charge, I know, for your committee, and our staff is looking at, you know, the unintended consequence of the switch and really evaluating and see if there's a better way to do it from here, because we have taken away, those tournaments are all gone, the Gator Bowl, the K-Swiss, you name
the
Cracker Land.
That's right.
Take away the entrepreneur, and I don't know, honestly, I'm not sure if we understood, and in all fairness, that those decisions that were made, we're going to do that. That's why it's good to have yourself and Steve Bellamy and Kevin Kebman and Mitch and Mark. I mean, have Coach Riley, who runs the national, our showcase. What a great thing to have Coach Riley from Kalamazoo talking with you about these issues. I think we're going to come up with I think we're going to ask the right questions, and I think we're going to have, have perhaps some answers that are like, you know, that would be a better way, again, for our customers, which are our children and their parents. That's our customers. We need it. We need to remember that. It's not the USTA. It's not the committees. It's not the referees. It's really the kids and their parents saying, you know what, I want to come to Camden County, Georgia, and play that event. It's just, that's why I love tennis, because I love this place. And let's get more of those out there.
Right, and listen, it goes deeper, and you know, we could talk about this one forever, but I'm so appreciative that you are for bottom-up management, your incentive, and I'm glad you've lived that, because when you manage from top down, this is the problem. You de-incentivize, you disincentivize those people in the grassroots position. You don't want to do that. When it's awarded from the top down, it would be like government. What government does, now, I promise I wasn't going to talk about politics, but here, top down management is like federal government giving all the money and saying, look, you will use this for Department of Education, you will use this for Department of Environmental stuff, well, you will use this. How good would it be if they say, hey, you know what, guys, we could only spend $900 billion this year, the United States, or we're going to go bankrupt, and by the way, California, we're going to give you $48 billion, do what you want. So the governor out there, whoever it is, says, you know what, we're going to put most of it towards roads, but some to education, the other we're going to put towards here. By the way, we got to raise so much with our taxes. Then at the city level, they do on and on and on. So basically, Virgil, I'm so glad you're saying what you say. We need bottom-up management with this stuff, and we need to incentivize the people in the grassroots areas. Again, 72% of our top athletes are coming from these rural areas. Rural tennis, high school tennis, I think I pumped that home enough.
Yep.
Virgil, any other real quick thoughts? We've got about 1 minute here.
Well, Coach, this is an honor. You know, you were I've followed your career. I've played against you. I've coached against you, and it's always been great. And when you talk about college coaching, you know, the real icons, I always think of you. So this has been great to, one, reconnect with you again at some of these meetings, listen to your voice, hearing your thoughts. I mean, it's invigorating for me. So,
well,
you know, for those out there,
listen, Likewise, man, I'm throw a little sunshine your way there, but man, I'm glad you're in the trenches because we need you there in the trenches.
Made in America, born in a hot land, raised up a family, a King James and Uncle Sam. He got the red, white, blue, flying high on a farm. Semper Fi tattooed on his Simpsons. Spent a little more in the store for a tag in the back of his USA. Won't buy nothing that he can't fix. With WD-40 and a Craftsman wrench, he ain't president. He's just made in America.
Saying thank you, Virgil Christian, and tribute to Holmes Catherall for his great posterity and giving so much and putting so many fine people, men and women, out into the coaching arena. And I want to remind you that you're in the process of winning or losing every day of your life, and it has very little to do with the win or loss. God bless you all. See you again next week.
Opinions stated by various contributors to the UR Tennis Network and its programming are not to be considered as endorsed by the UR Tennis Network. Participants are encouraged to use their own discernments and draw their own conclusions. All information, products, and services offered by the UR Tennis Network are for personal use only. The UR Tennis Network does not confirm nor deny the validity or accuracy of information contained within the network. Any products or services provided for should be used solely for entertainment purposes. We emphasize the idea of keeping an open mind and not construing the products, services, or data as factual.